Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
This was an attack deliberately targeted at the Jewish community on the first day of Hanukkah, which of course should be a joyous celebration. And the Jewish community are hurting today. Today, all Australians wrap our arms around them and say, we stand with you.
Australia's in a state of mourning after two gunmen, a father and a son, fatally shot 15 people at a Hanukkah celebration in Sydney. At least 42 people were injured in Australia's worst mass shooting in nearly three decades. We'll speak to journalist Anthony Lowenstein, who serves on the advisory committee of the Jewish Council of Australia. Then we go to Brown University, where a manhunt continues 3 days after a mass gunman opened fire in a lecture hall, killing two students, injuring nine others. A person of interest was detained, but then released last night. We'll speak to a Brown sophomore who survived that shooting. She also survived a school shooting in 2019 at a high school in Santa Clarita, California. She was shot in the stomach. Afterwards, Mia Tretta dedicated her life to preventing gun violence.
Those words, never again, that we say after every shooting should have meant something. Unfortunately, it didn't, to so many people. And it kept happening and kept happening. It feels like America's the only country that takes gun violence and shootings as a fact of life. And it doesn't have to be.
Plus, Iranian authorities have rearrested Nobel Peace Prize laureate Narges Mohammadi, one of Iran's most prominent human rights activists. She was arrested after speaking at a memorial for a human rights lawyer. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Sydney, Australia, a father and son killed at least 15 people in a mass shooting at a Hanukkah celebration on Bondi Beach Sunday. 42 people were injured. At least 27 remain in the hospital. Victims included a 10-year-old girl, two rabbis, and a Holocaust survivor who died while shielding his wife from bullets. Police say the massacre was carried out by a 50-year-old father and his 24-year-old son. The father, Sajid Akram, was shot dead by police. The son, Naveed Akram, was arrested after being tackled by a fruit vendor named Ahmed Al-Ahmed. Footage circulating widely showed Ahmed grabbing Akram as he fired on a crowd before taking the gun from him and pointing it at him. The mass shooting was the deadliest attack in Australia since the 1996 Port Arthur massacre. This is Levi Wolf, the rabbi from the Central Synagogue at Bondi.
As a Jewish people, we will not be silenced. As a Jewish people, our light will not be dimmed. And the holiday of Hanukkah will remind us and the world that a little bit of light dispels a lot of darkness. And what we need to do is add in our light.
We'll go to Sydney, Australia, to speak with journalist Anthony Lowenstein, who serves on the advisory committee of the Jewish Council of Australia. That story after headlines. In Rhode Island, the search for a gunman who killed two students and injured nine others at Brown University Saturday has entered its third day, after authorities released a person of interest detained early Sunday. Seven of the students remain hospitalized in critical condition. A shelter-in-place order around the Brown campus was lifted early Sunday morning when the person of interest was arrested. Meanwhile, the university has canceled all classes and tests for the rest of the semester. According to the Gun Violence Archive, Saturday's attack was the 389th mass shooting in the United States this year. There have since been three other mass shootings. We'll hear from one of the survivors, Mia Tretta, who survived another shooting when she was in high school. Filmmaker Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner, were found dead with stab wounds Sunday afternoon in their home in Los Angeles. The deaths are being investigated as homicides, according to law enforcement. Reiner was a longtime actor and director, was known for his films The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, and A Few Good Men. He rose to fame as one of the stars of Norman Lear's All in the Family. Reiner was also a prominent donor and supporter of Democratic candidates. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass said, quote, an acclaimed actor, director, producer, writer, and engaged political activist, Rob always used his gifts in service of others. He and Michelle fought for early childhood development and marriage equality, working to overturn Proposition 8. They were true champions for LGBTQ plus rights, the mayor said. President Trump Saturday vowed to retaliate against ISIS after three Americans, two U.S. soldiers and their interpreter were killed in an attack in Palmyra in central Syria. They're the first U.S. casualties in Syria since Syrian rebels toppled the regime of Bashar al-Assad a year ago. According to the Pentagon, the attack comes as the U.S. is reducing its troops in Syria from 2,000 at the beginning of the year to around 1,000 today. Hamas has confirmed the death of senior commander Raed Saad, who was killed in an Israeli strike on Gaza City Saturday that also killed another three Palestinians while injuring 25 others. In response, Hamas's chief negotiator warned the assassination threatens the viability of the Gaza ceasefire and called on President Trump to ensure Israel complies with terms of the October 10th truce. Gaza's government media office reports Israel's broken terms of the U.S. brokered ceasefire at least 738 times since it took effect October 10th, killing at least 386 Palestinians while severely restricting shipments of food, shelter, medicine, fuel, and other basic goods into Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel's Security Cabinet has approved plans to formally recognize 19 settlement outposts in the occupied West Bank that are illegal, even under Israeli law. Israeli media reports the plan was promoted by far-right cabinet member Bezalel Smotrich and coordinated in advance with the Trump administration. The Palestinian Colonization and Wall Resistance Commission condemned the move as, quote, a dangerous escalation that exposes the true intentions of the occupation government to entrench a system of annexation, apartheid, and full Judaization of Palestinian land, unquote. In Morocco, at least 37 people have been killed in flash floods triggered by torrential rains in the coastal province of Safi. According to authorities, at least 70 homes and businesses in the historic old city were flooded after just 1 hour of heavy rain. Morocco is currently experiencing heavy rain and snowfall on the Atlas Mountains after 7 years of drought emptied some of its main reservoirs. A newly unsealed warrant shows the U.S. Coast Guard seized the oil tanker Skipper near Venezuela just before the warrant was set to expire last Wednesday. The warrant was signed by a U.S. magistrate judge in November, was obtained under federal law that authorizes the U.S. government to seize all assets that are, quote, engaged in planning or perpetrating any federal crime of terrorism, unquote. This comes as the New York Times reports the oil tanker seized by the U.S. was part of the Venezuelan government's effort to support Cuba. The skipper was reportedly carrying nearly 2 million barrels of Venezuelan oil and was headed to the Cuban port of Matanzas. This is Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel.
Cuba denounces and condemns this return to gunboat diplomacy, this threatening diplomacy, the scandalous theft, one more in the already long list of looting of Venezuelan state assets. It is unacceptable interference in the international affairs of a nation that set the course for the independence of America.
Meanwhile, the U.S. military commander who oversaw the Pentagon's attacks on boats in the Pacific and the Caribbean, Admiral Alvin Halsey, said he'll retire at the end of the year. The U.S. has provided no evidence backing claims the boats were used for drug trafficking. In Chile, far-right candidate Jose Antonio Kast was elected president Sunday. Kast has vowed to crack down on crime and immigration and has called for a mass deportation campaign. He's also praised the U.S.-backed military dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet, saying, quote, if he were alive, he would vote for me, unquote. Iranian security forces have rearrested the human rights activist and Nobel Peace laureate Narges Mohammadi after a violent crackdown on a memorial service for a human rights lawyer who died under suspicious circumstances. Mohammadi was reportedly hospitalized twice after she and other activists were beaten by Iranian forces that used tear gas to disperse a crowd that gathered Friday in the eastern city of Mashhad to remember Khosrow Alikhordi, the human rights lawyer found dead in his office earlier this month. Mohammadi and other protesters viewed his death as suspicious and potentially state-linked killing. In 2023, Mohammadi was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize while incarcerated in Tehran's notorious Evin prison before her temporary release on medical grounds a year ago. She had had several heart attacks in prison. She's already spent over a decade behind bars for her human rights work, including opposition to capital punishment and Iran's obligatory hijab laws. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. A court in Hong Kong has convicted media tycoon and pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai on charges he colluded with foreign governments in violation of a sweeping national security law imposed by Beijing. He faces life imprisonment at a sentencing scheduled early next year. Ahead of his conviction, Lai's family expressed alarm over his deteriorating health, including dramatic weight loss while he was jailed in solitary confinement. Meanwhile, Hong Kong's last major opposition party has officially disbanded under pressure from Chinese authorities. Leaders of the Hong Kong Democratic Party said they were told to liquidate the organization or face severe consequences, including possible arrest. This is the party's former chairwoman, Emily Lau.
The current political environment is getting worse and worse. Many journalists have been arrested and many citizens are very afraid. Many people have already left Hong Kong while many others still fear being arrested. This is the situation now. Under such circumstances, the Democratic Party is on the verge of disappearing.
Belarus released 123 political prisoners Saturday, including Nobel Peace Prize winner Alas Bialyatsky and leading opposition figure Maria Kolesnikova, as the Trump administration announced it would lift sanctions on Belarusian potash. President Trump's envoy, John Cole, told Reuters about 1,000 political prisoners left in Belarus could be released in the coming months. This is Viktor Babarika, a former Belarusian presidential candidate who was freed over the weekend.
Those who came out or those who speak publicly should not talk about how they were or what they felt. Because in reality, there are still many people inside the system who, depending on what we say, will usually face negative consequences.
Minnesota Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar says federal immigration agents pulled over her son on Saturday and asked him to provide proof of his U.S. citizenship. Omar told TV station WCCO the incident came just one day after she warned her son to be careful in parts of Minneapolis that are home to large populations of Somali Americans, whom President Trump recently described in a racist tirade as garbage.
I had to remind him just how worried I am, because all of these areas that they're talking about are areas where he could possibly find himself in. And they are racially profiling. They are looking for young men who look Somali, that they think are undocumented.
Meanwhile, a man and woman in a Minneapolis suburb are facing charges of assaulting a federal officer after they drove away with a Homeland Security Investigations agent in the passenger seat of their car following an immigration stop. The agent reportedly pointed a gun at the car's driver, while her companion dialed 911 from the back seat to report they were taking the agent to a police station. The driver was arrested outside the station while federal agents chased the man into a grocery store and tased him. Democrats on the House Oversight Committee have released dozens of photographs showing the late serial sex offender Jeffrey Epstein with high-profile celebrities and politicians, including Presidents Bill Clinton and Donald Trump. The photos were selected from a cache of more than 95,000 turned over to the committee by Epstein's estate. Three of the photos show Trump. In one, he appears next to Epstein at a 1997 Victoria's Secret event. Another image shows a cartoon likeness of Trump on packages with the caption, "I'm huge," next to a sign reading, "Trump condom, $4.50." The pictures also show Epstein with Woody Allen, former Prince Andrew, Richard Branson, and Steve Bannon, among others. The National Trust for Historic Preservation is suing to block President Trump from constructing a 90,000-square-foot ballroom at the White House. The lawsuit states, quote, "No president is legally allowed to construct a ballroom on public property without giving the public the opportunity to weigh in," unquote. Trump's $300 million ballroom is being funded by wealthy individuals and corporations that include Amazon, Lockheed Martin, and Palantir Technologies. And a JetBlue Airways pilot says he narrowly avoided a mid-air collision with a U.S. military aircraft that entered his flight path while taking off from Curaçao on Friday. The pilot said the U.S. military aircraft was headed towards Venezuelan airspace. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Australia's vowing to enact stricter gun laws after a father and son fatally shot 15 people at a Hanukkah celebration in Sydney's famed Bondi Beach. At least 42 others were injured in Australia's worst mass shooting in nearly three decades since the 1996 Port Arthur massacre. Victims included a 10-year-old girl, two rabbis, and a Holocaust survivor who died while shielding his wife from bullets. This is the Australian Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese.
What we saw yesterday was an act of pure evil, an act of anti-Semitism, an act of terrorism on our shores in an iconic Australian location, Bondi Beach, that is associated with joy, associated with families gathering, associated with celebrations, and it is forever tarnished by what has occurred last evening. This was an attack deliberately targeted at the Jewish community on the first day of Hanukkah, which of course should be a joyous celebration, and the Jewish community are hurting today. Today all Australians wrap our arms around them and say, "We stand with you. We will do whatever is necessary to stamp out anti-Semitism. It is a scourge, and we will eradicate it together."
Police say the massacre was carried out by a 50-year-old father and his 24-year-old son. The father, Sajid Akram, was shot dead by police. The son, Naveed Akram, was arrested after being tackled by a fruit vendor named Ahmed El Ahmed. Video shows Ahmed tackling the gunman, then grabbing his gun and pointing it at the gunman. Ahmed was hospitalized after suffering bullet wounds to his arm and hand. Ahmed is an Australian citizen who immigrated from Syria in 2006. His father spoke via translator to ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, earlier today.
He noticed one of the armed men at a distance, from him hiding behind a tree. My son is a hero. He served with the police and in the central security forces, and he has the impulse to protect people. When he saw people lying on the ground and the blood everywhere, immediately his conscience and his soul compelled him to pounce on one of the terrorists and to rid him of his weapon. At the same moment, the armed man's other friend was on the bridge, or whoever he is. I feel pride and honor because my son is a hero of Australia.
Ahmed Al-Ahmed is being widely hailed as a hero who saved many lives. Residents of Sydney praised his actions.
You'd like to hope that you would react the same way if you had the chance. I don't know if I'm as strong as he is. He was incredibly strong and very brave and managed to take the gun off the guy, which is incredible.
Yeah, I think he's a national hero for sure. Probably an international hero. A lot of people around the world wouldn't have done that. A lot of people ran away from the gunfire. He ran towards it, so fair play to him. Probably saved a lot of lives.
We go now to Sydney, Australia, where we're joined by Anthony Lowenstein, an Australian-German independent journalist based in Sydney, a member of the Advisory Committee of the Jewish Council of Australia, and author of the best-selling book, The Palestine Laboratory, How Israel Exports the Technology of Occupation Around the World. Anthony is the subject of the 2024 documentary film Not In My Name, which was broadcast on Australia's ABC TV and Al Jazeera English. The documentary focuses on Jewish dissent and Anthony's critical journalism on Israel-Palestine. Anthony, first of all, condolences on what has taken place on Bondi Beach in Sydney. Can you take us through what happened?
Thank you for having me, Amy, and thank you for those condolences. Look, I was not in Bondi myself. I was about half an hour away last night. I was celebrating Hanukkah at my home with my family. I'm not religious, but it's become, I guess, almost a cultural annual celebration with my family. There were two gunmen. I found out very quickly what was going on. It wasn't obviously entirely clear initially the extent of the carnage. We now know some more details. There's so much we still don't know about this horrific attack. It was clearly directed at the Jewish community. There was a public Hanukkah event on Bondi. For those who don't know, a lot of people know Bondi. It's an internationally famous beach. It's a very open place with lots of tourists, lots of Australians. It's obviously summer here, so it's obviously warm. And it was light, so it gets dark here quite late being summer. And it was a celebration. Now, this horrific attack was not just terrorism, but it was directed at a Jewish community that has been, frankly, split for the last years around Israel-Palestine, which I know we'll get to in a minute. Now, there's no indication yet why this attack happened, the motives. There's some evidence and indication that these two killers were associated with ISIS or certainly radical Islamists that traveled to the Philippines recently to potentially associate with some kind of Islamist groups. It's not 100% confirmed yet. But in short, I'm feeling sad and anger, actually, a lot of anger, because it's already being weaponized by the worst people imaginable to support incredibly draconian policies.
I wanted to turn to the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. He was speaking in Dimona on Sunday, accusing the Australian government of promoting anti-Semitism.
On August 17th, about 4 months ago, I sent Prime Minister Albanese of Australia a letter in which I gave him warning that the Australian government's policy was promoting and encouraging anti-Semitism in Australia. I wrote, "Your call for a Palestinian state pours fuel on the anti-Semitic fire. It rewards Hamas terrorism. It emboldens those who menace Australian Jews and encourages the Jew hatred now stalking your streets."
So that's the Israeli Prime Minister weighing in. Anthony Lowenstein, if you can respond and talk about the position of the Australian government. Albanese certainly came out quickly.
I mean, what a disgraceful human being. I'm talking about Netanyahu there. You know, within a few hours of this attack last night, Amy, a number of Israeli government ministers, Netanyahu, the foreign minister there, the minister for diaspora affairs, and many others, essentially wrote posts on social media suggesting that the Australian government recognised Palestine a few months ago, which is true, that somehow that was causing the terrorist attack, the fact that Australia has allowed, so the argument goes, pro-Palestine protests. No, like this kind of connection is absolutely disgraceful. The idea that the Israeli government, a government that has overseen a genocide and mass slaughter for over 2 years in Gaza, is the moral arbiter of anything, is farcical. And what's so worrying is that so much of the Australian media, many in the, I'd say, more pro-Israel Jewish community, somehow looks to Israel, Netanyahu, as a moral guide. The Australian government is, generally speaking, pretty pro-Israel. We have still been, I've been doing a lot of reporting on this, a lot of weapons passed to the F-35 fighter jet that Israel's been using over Gaza. This idea somehow that the Australian government's anti-Israel is absurd. And we live in a very flawed democracy, but a democracy where people are allowed to peacefully protest. And there's been huge amounts of protests by Jews and Christians and Muslims and others, like in most Western countries in the last 2+ years. So to have the Israeli government, an utterly morally moribund government, talk about accountability is really the height of chutzpah, and that's being polite.
Anthony Lowenstein, talk about the Jewish Council of Australia that you are a member of.
The Jewish Council founded after October 7, and it's basically made up of progressive Jews, young and old, who did not feel represented by the so-called mainstream Jewish organizations here. It's sort of similar in a way to what you've seen in the US over the last years, and really before October 7, which has been almost a civil war of sorts within the Jewish community between a very, I would say, hardline, pro-occupation, pro-Israeli government, certainly pro-Gaza war, and many other young Jews, increasingly young Jews, who feel so disillusioned and disgusted by that blind support. So the Jewish Council was founded, and it's really become a vital alternative voice to represent Jews and others, but principally Jews, who don't share those politics that regard the blind support that many in the pro-Israel community advocate towards the Israeli government is not just unhealthy, but endangering all of us. Now, we don't know, obviously, enough details about last night's horrific attack, but it's clear that, and I've thought this and said this for years, Amy, that what the Israeli government is doing in Palestine, Gaza, the West Bank and beyond, endangers everybody, Jews particularly, but others as well, that nothing justifies anti-Semitic attacks or violence, nothing does, including last night. But the idea somehow that a Jewish state created under the guise of protecting Jews actually now creates massive danger for Jews around the world is, to me, undeniable. It's more unsafe. It's more unsafe to be a Jew in Israel than arguably anywhere else in the world. Now, I'm not denying at all anti-Semitism. It's real, as in real anti-Semitism, attacks against Jews or synagogues or last night's attack in Bondi. And it's increasing and worsening in vast parts of the world. And it worries me deeply as a human and a Jew. But we cannot disregard the fact that Israeli government actions play a part in that. And too often, sadly, those voices are ignored in the community here, so therefore the Jewish Council was vital.
Anthony, can you talk about the bystander? I think he was a fruit vendor, Ahmed al-Ahmed, and how he stopped what could have been a far deadlier attack. I mean, his bravery was just astounding.
Amazing. A lot of people may have seen this footage on social media, and I'd encourage them to see it if they don't, if they haven't. Is that he essentially went towards one of the gunmen to try to disarm him, I guess. He apparently is an Australian citizen. He comes from Syria, was born in Syria. He essentially fought the gunman relatively quickly, got the gun off him, then pointed the gun at the gunman, did not shoot, and then put the gun down, almost putting his hands up to suggest that he was not a threat himself. There's no doubt he saved huge amounts of lives. And what's been so, you know, heartening, when there has been so much growing, and this again was happening long before last night's attack, Amy, shamefully, like it is in many Western countries, growing anti-Islam sentiment, growing anti-immigration sentiment, anti-Muslim sentiment, to have a Muslim man stand up and be brave. Now, I know that that's what a lot of humans would do, but to see a Muslim do that and to be recognised for that, I think is important to realise that Muslims are a major part of Australian society. We're 27 million population here. It's a relatively small country, the same size as the US geographically, but a very small population. There's about 800,000 Muslims and about 120,000 Jews. And there's been a number of Palestinians from Gaza who have been brought to Australia since October 7, around 3,000.